Facebook costs trillions of dollars in productivity. A veteran life streamer turns to Snapchat. And would you buy lettuce from a robot vegetable factory? All that and more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1443, recorded Thursday, February 4th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TNT.
And by NatureBox. NatureBox is dedicated to making smart, delicious snacking easy. They have over 100 ridiculously delicious snacks that get delivered directly to your doorstep. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we talk about all the tech news with people who are passionate about technology, journalists, all the people. I am Megan Maroney.
And I am Jason Howell. Somebody on Twitter, by the way, sent me a picture of what I look like when I'm trying to not make a face, but I'm giving a high five and I look equally weird.
Yes.
So I don't know if this high five thing should continue anymore. Now that I've noticed I have a high five face, I don't know if I can do it anymore.
You should wear virtual reality goggles while you're doing the high five, and then
that'll
no
look
one
normal.
Would see. Yes.
No, that'll look totally normal in like 25, 30 years. Joining us today with 93% sparkling wit is Aaron Carson from Tech Republic. How's it going, Aaron?
It's great. Thanks so much for having me.
Maybe I shouldn't have called out the actual percentage point, but I'm pretty confident you can come in at 93% today.
You know, it's good to set expectations.
Yes.
It's good to have you here. So what are you kind of working on at Tech Republic? What's your beat? What are the stories that you kind of follow these days?
Yeah, so I have a couple different beats, but the thing that's sort of all-consuming right now is virtual reality, as well as augmented reality.
Nice.
So basically, kind of when anything comes down the pike, I'm kind of on it for like a second-day analysis kind of story. I also do a ton with social media and how businesses use social.
Right.
So everything from how to run a Twitter chat to, you know, how to like edit a post on Instagram or whatever else. So
excellent.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah, last time we talked, you had just gotten back from NASA from Houston, where you visited the VR lab there. I got to wear the goggles, feel like what it was like to walk in space. That was very cool.
Yeah, that was definitely trippy, and I still kind of think about that sometimes.
Not everyone gets the chance to go to NASA, so you should still think about that. I'm kind of jealous.
All right, well, let's get into our social media story of the day. Happy 12th birthday to you, Facebook, in honor of your birthday. You gave us the gift of a little tearjerker of a video of all of our friends, or some of our friends, the ones you chose from some sort of secret algorithm you know about us. And you also give us the gift of wasting our time. In fact, according to CNBC, Facebook has caused $3.5 trillion in squandered productivity. I have to agree with this. I mean, it feels sometimes like it's $3.5 trillion just from me.
The ultimate time waster is Facebook?
Yeah.
We'd be wasting our time with something else if it wasn't Facebook, wouldn't we?
Sure. Right?
Maybe.
You know, it's funny, like, you see so many of these huge numbers. We're always talking about millions and billions. But with a number like that, in terms of wasting time, I don't question at all. That's accurate. I need no fact check on that.
Well, it's just like you feel like you fall into this Facebook vortex. You know, it's not something that like, oh, I'm going to spend 5 minutes
so
or 10
true.
Minutes
oh
or 15
God.
Minutes. It's my appointment with Facebook. It's just like, okay, I'm just going to look. And then, you know, 30 minutes later and you kind of feel like you've just eaten too many marshmallows.
Okay. Total case in point is this afternoon preparing for this story, opening it up because, you know, of course, Facebook has their Friends Day videos, mm-hmm. you know, that you were talking about mm-hmm. that they cut together. And I go to Facebook first to log in and then to kind of check out the Friends Day videos so that I had something to, you know, some kind of point of reference. Before I ever even started playing the Friends Day video, I caught myself for like 2 minutes, like scrolling through my news feed. Oh, that comment. I was like, wait a minute, what am I doing? Facebook, why are you so good at this? Why do you steal my time?
I did the same thing because I also went on going like, oh, I haven't seen my Friends Day video. And it was like, well, 10 minutes later, I'm like, wait, why am I here? Facebook is basically like when you walk into a room and then you realize you don't remember why you went there in the first place.
Totally. That's absolutely it.
So yeah, they made some other announcements. They celebrated some stories of friendship, something called Girl Crew, which now is over 22,000 people in crews that empower women to find friends and organize events in their area, which is interesting to me. I didn't know that women had trouble finding friends and getting together. I thought that was a man problem.
I thought that was just a people problem. I mean, I know we've all had problems with finding friends. Oh, okay, maybe I'm talking about myself. I have a hard time finding friends.
Oh, you do? I'm going to send you one of those best friend stickers. That's another thing
that
they released today.
Thank you.
Oh,
that makes me feel so much better.
Which just reminds me of like all of the things, the 12 years of Facebook, the poking and the stickers, the writing on people's walls. It's all like infantilizing us. It always has been, and yet we love it. It's weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes I think that people just really want it all boiled down to a sticker. I mean, I definitely agree it infantilizes, but some part of your brain is like, I know this because they gave me a sticker.
Right.
You know? Think of it this way. It could be worse, right? Like one of the things that Facebook did that I think has been a large part of its direct appeal in the social network world and why it's one of the most popular, you know, arguably one of the most popular services and companies out there right now, the technology space, is because they kind of simplified and removed a lot of clutter. Like, you remember MySpace? Like, there was a time where I was super devoted and dedicated and loved MySpace. Everybody did. At a certain point, it just got so noisy. Like, we liked the idea of being able to be social. Mm-hmm. But at some point, it got a little too blinky and a little too blingy, and Facebook was like the antithesis to that. It was like just the information, just the friends. We're not going to let you kind of spoil the experience. We're going to kind of peel it back, give you this plain vanilla environment in which to do it with. And largely over the years, it's kind of stuck to that. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of helped it to a large degree.
Well, so the other big thing that Facebook does is connect large groups of people. So they released a study today that says that there's no longer 6 degrees of separation from every person on Earth, or in this case, every person on Facebook. Now that number is more like 3.5 degrees of separation. So that is, of course, among the 1.59 billion people who are active on Facebook. If you go to this page that we're on now, if you're watching the video, you can see what your degree of separation. So nice. Anthony Nielsen, who is our live producer, he has 3.34 degrees of separation from everyone.
Oh, my God. 3.34. Actually, I don't know. Like, is that just...
I think
like
that,
the point differential here between all of ours. Like, what was yours, Megan?
Mine was 2.9, or maybe no, it was 3. I don't know.
I was going to say, you broke into the twos?
I tweeted it. No, 3.22. And some people ask me, because below it says, compares you to some Facebook employees, for example, Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg. So a few people ask me, like, wait, you have 3 degrees of separation to them? Like, no. That's their degrees of separation. Mine is 3.22. And I don't know what this is. I mean, LinkedIn has been doing this forever, and I've always sort of found that fascinating because they actually tell you who you're connected to and how, for good reason, to get a job.
It's a big part of why it exists, is to put you in touch with others. Yeah, I'm 3.26, by the way. Aaron, do you happen to know yours?
I was 3.3 as well.
Okay.
And then I got like the streak of competitiveness that sort of like surged through me, and I was like, I wonder how many other people are going to get that number down.
Everybody's roughly around the same area, though, here.
Yeah.
The differential is not that big.
And it's interesting, too, because we've talked about this, and you're more of a cultivator of your friends list.
Yeah, I keep it pretty locked down to just close friends and family.
I don't.
Well, and you have a lower number, so maybe that's representative in your final answer.
Yeah, but then my husband and my sister, like the two closest people to me, are not on Facebook at all. So, then that's confusing, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, moving into another realm here, subscribers to YouTube Red, which is the ad-free version of YouTube, are about to gain access to exclusive content produced by YouTube itself. February 10th is the launch day for YouTube Red Originals. are going to launch with three films, as well as a reality series featuring PewDiePie called Scare PewDiePie to start off with. And they're obviously going to... Did I do that right?
That's how he sounds. I don't know. I'm not a PewDiePie fan like you are.
Anyways, three movies, A Trip to Unicorn Island, which is like a documentary about Lily Singh on her global tour. Someone I don't know. Dance Camp, a teen musical, and Laser Team, which is a sci-fi action comedy. YouTube Red costs $10 a month, and I'm actually a YouTube Red subscriber because I am a Play Music subscriber. Personally, I think it's the best deal in the world because you never realize how great YouTube is until you remove the ads from the entire experience. It becomes so much more, so much better to deal with.
I am not a YouTube Red subscriber yet, but it makes perfect sense. I mean, especially because, you know, that's what you pay for most music streaming services. So you get that and ads taken away. So I don't know why. I mean, is Google Play Music, is that your only streaming service that you
use? Yeah, it's my primary streaming service, and I'm very happy with it. You know, because it's got the integrated library, the cloud storage library, so all of my music that may not even be in their library is up there, and it's kind of seamlessly integrated into the music library that they have. So it's really just one gigantic access point to everything that I actually want to listen to for the most part.
How about
so
you, Aaron?
It's a great bonus. You know,
are you a YouTube Red subscriber?
I am not. But, you know, the funny thing in kind of reading about this is that I had this moment where I was like, I can't believe they haven't been doing sort of their own content like that before. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's kind of a logical step. But I was wondering, it seems like for a lot of folks, especially on the entertainment end, it's like the premium shows that kind of, you know, really sort of like high end TV experience or whatever is the thing that really helps people kind of lay down, you know, $10 for not just Netflix, but Hulu and, you know, your whatever $100 a year for Prime or whatnot. So I was like, I wonder how that'll balance when they're using, you know, talent that's already so available for free on YouTube in, you know, kind of extended formats. But I think that the good thing about that, though, is kind of like you're saying, I mean, if you're paying that money, but you're also getting all these other benefits with it, certainly it helps kind of sell it.
Yeah, even more. Like Netflix didn't start as an originals company. They only really got into this relatively recently in the last 2 to 3 years. Netflix's service and value has gone from you're paying this amount to either get the DVDs in the mail or streaming or both or whatever of, you know, an okay list of shows and TV and movies to you get Netflix because there's so much really great original content. And you also get so-so movies and some really great TV shows to boot. So its value add has really increased by adding original content. But the shows and movies that Netflix releases, like their originals, are really highly produced. Like they can go toe-to-toe with all the, you know, all other top-tier content. YouTube, I think the difference here is definitely like, can YouTube stars bring enough to the table in a paid sort of sense, like you said, Aaron, to where the true fans of their content and of YouTube as a platform in general really want to spend $10 a month. And I don't know, but it's a younger audience, right? Like the younger, there is definitely a younger audience that is going to find the value in this. And like, I don't know if I would pay, I wouldn't pay $10 for PewDiePie's reality show, but I know that there are a lot of people that probably would.
Well, and so I think it's really psychological too, because Netflix, we always paid for Netflix. There was never any free Netflix. You know, it was always a subscription, whether we were getting the DVDs in the mail or whatever. It was never something that you ever got for free. It was exciting when, you know, you could stream everything for free. Then they kind of went from like, oh, well, I'm paying the same and I'm getting a lot of money. They went back and forth. They had some trouble, you know, with trying to do different services that people refuse to pay for. But now, you know, that's where you started. But it's just, it's so psychological because it's like, oh, YouTube's always been free. And I think the younger generation doesn't really care about ads watching them. You know, they'll just skip through them. And so it is interesting. And meanwhile, you have people like Louis C.K. announced yesterday, he has a brand new series. He started to say he's going to charge $5 per episode. So, you know, and it's like, I love him and, you know, I'll pay that because I really like him. And it's not, you know, it's not like, it's, you know, I'm older. And so I'm like, I love Louis C.K. I love his model. He's like, hey, why don't you just pay me $5 and you'll get to see this. And he lowered it to $3 after that. So per episode, which is way more than what you can get in any of these other streaming. So I think it's really just your age and what you are willing to pay for. It's not really a strictly economic argument, I think.
Yeah. And how closely you identify with the people that are creating this content, right?
Right.
Like on YouTube, it is just people who are creating content and suddenly they have millions of subscribers, you know, and those subscribers are dedicated to their brand. And so they might find value. You know, Louis C.K. is a prime example of that. Mm-hmm. Incredible online following. And I'm sure, and a lot of those people are charged up enough to find value in paying X amount of dollars a month just for content from him because they're such huge supporters. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they just might not need to have like a name like Marvel, for example,
right?
Mm-hmm. You know, in their roster to do well.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to Android Wear. It's getting an update, including new ways to scroll on your watch, voice support for sending messages, and the ability to make and take calls with new speaker support. So it's only a few watches so far. You need a watch with a speaker. That includes the Huawei Watch and the Asus ZenWatch 2, 49 millimeter. In the future, the Casio Smart Outdoor Watch and the one that I like to say so much, the Huawei Watch for ladies.
The Huawei Watch for ladies. I just find Huawei Watch to be a lot of fun to say.
And then add for ladies and double
sounds
the fun.
Like a Elmer Fudd or something.
Well, believe me.
Line or something.
Oh, man. You can get into, you can get into trouble really fast when you're talking about the Huawei Watch. And all, because suddenly you find yourself using tons of other words that begin with the letter W, and it becomes a comedy skit in and of itself.
Okay, so I have an Apple Watch. You have what Android Wear watch do you have?
I wear the Moto. See, I wear the Moto 360, the first generation. It does not have a speaker, but all Wear devices are going to get the Marshmallow update. So all of them that have released so far are going to get that. They haven't quite reached the point where Android phones, you know, like when they time out somewhere around like 2 years, it's like, yeah, we're not going to bring it to that phone anymore. All Wear watches are going to get this update, whether they have an onboard speaker and can do some of these features or not.
Aaron, are you a wearable wearer?
I'm holding out. I am not.
So you're a watch. Do you have an old-fashioned watch or just nothing on the wrist at all?
Nothing. My argument, and you will get emails, but I just always tend to think that my phone is always in my hand for the most part, and the distance from the palm of my hand to the back of my wrist is not great enough for me personally to want to like strap on another tech device.
I see. So it's
fair
geometry. The geometry argument.
Basically,
the distance. Okay.
I can understand that. I kind of go back and forth with it, right? Like, I still don't know if I need this watch on my wrist, but I wear it because I have it. And there are times where it's totally handy to, have my phone in my pocket and get a notification and be like, okay, cool, I'm done with it. I don't have to, you know, do anything else. So.
Well, like the Android phones also, the whole process, the different watches, the different operating systems are really confusing. Whereas Apple, it's just like, we got one watch, we got one, you know, phone operating system. So it's confusing because there was also the LG Watch Urbane that was supposed to come out in November, the newest one that you were supposed to, it was supposed to have LTE.
It did. It came out
and then
for
it,
6 days.
And then it came out and then it went back.
What was so embarrassing about that too is that Google kind of had a big release around that and were touting that as the phone that's kind of heralding some of these new features, you know, that they were rolling out at the time. And then 6 days later, LG pulls it, and there's no more LG Watch Urbane. I will say one thing about Wear, though. As far as the OS, the operating system is concerned, it's definitely very different from Android phones in that Android Wear is not, it's the same across the board. It's the same UI, same everything, you know, no matter what device it happens to be installed on. Whereas a lot of Android phones, like, you go from one phone to another, they look very different. They operate differently. They can be kind of confusing as far as that's concerned. So Wear, thankfully, kind of takes care of that. And I will say that this, like, actions, wrist actions to do things, like, they already kind of have that as part of the current versions where you can kind of, you can hear, I'll try and avoid, but I can do this to kind of like swipe between my timeline and stuff.
Oh.
It's just interesting that they keep adding to this because soon you're going to be going like this and this, this and this and all sorts of stuff just to, when are you really, you could just go like this.
Yeah. You
know, it's cool.
Well, then you're not in the Minority Report then.
I know. Hey, it's the future. We're just living in it.
All right. You want to talk about Justin TV a little bit?
Sure. Justin TV has been many things throughout the years. It was a site that allowed live streaming pioneer Justin Kahn to stream his everyday live 24/7. I actually met him when he was doing that kind of stuff. It was really off, like very strange to talk to this guy. He had a camera on his head. It eventually became a site where anyone could broadcast their own live video online. The game streaming part of Justin TV eventually branched off and became the wildly successful Twitch that thrives today, as you know. But finally, Justin TV was shut down in 2014. We were streaming to it here at Twit, and we, you know, no longer stream there because it doesn't exist. Well, Justin Kahn is bringing Justin TV back to its roots. This time, he's taking to Snapchat to do it. He's going to post video of his life. Kind of similar in some ways, I suppose, to the early days when he was live streaming, though he's not going to be doing it 24/7. Videos of his life, startups, investments that he's kind of, actively kind of interested in, all that sort of stuff, as Snapchat stories. And he's hiring a person to help him do this. He says he thinks that Snapchat is kind of on the cusp, he says, of going mainstream, which I guess my question is, isn't Snapchat kind of mainstream at this point? I mean, I kind of feel on the cusp was already happened.
Yeah, are you a big Snapchatter, Aaron?
I do some Snapchat for Czech Republic,
okay.
But sort of neglect the Snapchat story in my own life. But yeah, funny you say, like, I thought it was mainstream. So going to CES just a few weeks ago, there's a giant Snapchat logo on the Luxor Hotel. You kind of figure if you can put something like that huge on a building that well known, I would say maybe we're like flirting with mainstream.
Yeah, right.
Right. I mean, if it's
you
the White House,
people to recognize
has,
it yeah. at that point. Right?
The White House has Snapchat.
That's like the epitome of parents crashing. Right. Parents getting in a little late, and you're like, all right, everyone, let's move to the next cool thing. The White House is here. Mm-hmm.
I remember when he started live streaming, and it was really weird, just the idea that someone would willingly just record their whole life, and, it was creepy that he would do that, and that was way before Google Glass, so it was just like he was this guy that was doing this. Creepy maybe is a little bit, it was innovative.
It was ahead of its time.
It was way ahead of its time because live streaming, like last year was the year when, live streaming became big. Like everyone realized, okay, that camera on the head is creepy, but if we carry it around with the phone that we are all already used to everyone carrying, it's maybe not as creepy. I think it's interesting now that he's chosen instead of becoming part of, Periscope and Meerkat, he's decided Snapchat is the way to go, which isn't the same as live streaming. I mean, first of all, it disappears the next day, which I guess some live streaming does. But Periscope was different because it sticks around and you could watch it again. Mm. But it is more curated. And he's actually the job description, if you read it, he's looking for someone to be more of a director seeing that this is as an art project. So I don't know what that says, why he chose to move to Snapchat as opposed to just picking up the live streaming technology that's ubiquitous, not only on those platforms, but also on Facebook.
Everybody's doing that.
Yeah, I guess so.
I think, Snapchat's kind of an interesting mix of things because on one hand, I think you have a sense of authenticity because, you do it quickly, you probably don't think about it too much, it deletes the next day, and yet you do still have that modicum of control, mm-hmm. You can preview it before you send it. You can draw on it or, add filters or whatever. So I don't know, maybe it strikes a balance for him where, live streaming is just a little bit too much, but Snapchat is still just on the edge enough.
Yeah, especially considering, he's hiring someone to do this. So it's not him doing a whole lot of the heavy lifting here. Right. Someone's going to be producing it for him, helping him film, come up with ideas, promoting the Snapchat channel. Using Snapchat as, the Snapchat stories as a way to do this kind of stuff. Maybe that's kind of the new angle here. And maybe it's a sign of what other people are going to kind of do.
I mean, it is interesting because also when he first started, the technology wasn't there. Like that was all him. Like mm-hmm. he was behind that. He used QuickTime.
Almost literally bootstrapped.
he used Flash. It was so interesting. Like he was building that. It wasn't just, it's like, oh, well, you can do that. Now it's weird that only 9 years later, we're like, well, of course you could live stream your life, but would you want to? That's the bigger question. Mm. All right. So Rejoice, Amazon Echo, devotees, you can now stream Spotify directly from your device as long as you are a premium subscriber. And when I say device, I mean your Amazon Echo. I won't call her by her name because then everyone who has one will have her doing my bidding and we can't have that. Yet. In the past, you've been able to listen to Spotify if you pair the Echo with your device. I found that very cumbersome because you have to go to your device every time to repair it. It's not automatic. And you could also listen to Pandora and Amazon Prime Music if you were a subscriber. And I guess, you know, Google Play Music is the last one, but I don't think they're going to come there automatically anytime soon. But who knows? Mm-hmm. I didn't expect Spotify and Apple Music also.
Yeah, that's a really good question because Amazon, you know, Amazon's version of Android just in general pretty much sidesteps any of the official Google apps like Play Music. So that's
they chose Spotify for their team against Apple and Google.
But I don't think that, you know, even on the Amazon Fire Stick, correct me if I'm wrong, chat room or emailers, because I'm sure you will if I am wrong. I don't think on the Fire Stick you can get to Play Movies, you know, Play Movies access or anything like that. I think they're kind of going around that. So yeah, you're probably right. Probably not that easy to get it.
All right. Well, after the break, we will bring back one of my favorite segments, Robots Do What? But first, let's take a minute to thank FreshBooks. FreshBooks is the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of businesses, just like yours, the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. If you are a freelancer, chances are sometimes you work in your pajamas. Sometimes you might have bagel crumbs on your shirt, and you might take conference calls lying in bed or while folding your laundry, and I may or may not
sounds like you know a little bit about this.
I don't want to say too much just in case the people I work for are listening or watching this show. That is okay. No one can see you. But what you don't want is for your work or your accounting practices to look like they have bagel crumbs all over them.
Truth.
FreshBooks will make you look more professional and save you time so you can take a nap after that conference call or maybe during it. Getting started on FreshBooks couldn't be easier, even if you're not a numbers person. You will be creating and sending invoices in minutes and get paid online right away with FreshBooks payments. Get paid up front. Now you can request a deposit in FreshBooks. No more covering costs out of pocket or waiting until the end of a project to get paid. Plus, FreshBooks recently announced their new card reader. Now you can easily accept credit cards wherever business takes you quickly and securely right from your iPhone in less than a minute. FreshBooks card reader is EMV chip card enabled. That's the new standard in the U.S. With their entirely redesigned iPhone app, you can conduct business anywhere. You can send an estimate right after the handshake, send an invoice in seconds right on your phone. It's so easy to track all of your billable time. Now you'll know how long your projects really take. FreshBooks says that every customer who uses FreshBooks has saved 192 hours annually just by using FreshBooks. With that extra time, they say you can watch Back to the Future 123 times. It's amazing.
And you might want to.
I want to.
It's a good movie.
FreshBooks allows you to focus on what you love the most, growing your business and eating bagels and watching Back to the Future and taking more naps. You'll wonder why you didn't start with FreshBooks sooner. If you have questions, help is free forever, and you can always count on FreshBooks' award-winning support rock stars to go above and beyond whenever you need a hand. Getting started is simple, and it's totally free for 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/TNT, and don't forget to enter Tech News Today in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Start your 30-day free trial today, and we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Tech News Today.
All right, first up in our trifecta of Robot Does What stories, I'll tell you what iRobot does. It sells off its defense portion of the business. Sure, we've all heard about the iRobot Roomba that vacuums your floor, but iRobot has been around for 26 years with robots that do all sorts of defense-like things, things like disposing of bombs, that's the packet robot, and getting thrown into dangerous environments, something none of us want to be in the position of, but robots like First Look, they're happy to do it. Maybe they aren't happy to do that. I'm not really quite sure, and if that's the case, we'll find out soon enough.
Yeah.
Home robot business, apparently, for iRobot comprises 90% of its revenue at this point, so it kind of swooped along. The vacuuming robots came in and took over, and there you go. Defense stuff, not so much.
So why do you think they did that? Just because their money was in vacuums, or because they were afraid that it was bad PR or something?
I think it's just a matter of kind of focusing their efforts. You know, if 90% of your business is in one place, and you've got this 10% business that you aren't really you don't want to necessarily go away entirely, because basically they're rolling it, or they're selling it to a new independent company, which doesn't sound independent when you hear the name iRobot Defense and Security. That name is going to be changed once the sale is final. But, you know, I think there is business there. It's just maybe it's just a matter of focus for the company, having kind of a defined focus for the company. Did you ever get one of those Roombas, Aaron? Was this ever a thing that really kind of, you had to have?
I never had one, yeah. But we had one in the office a short time ago. Our managing editor, Bill Detweiler, took one apart for CNET. And so that was kind of fun to see, like, the internal, you know, workings of them. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like such a kind of vote of confidence towards all the popularity of smart home tech. Mm-hmm. You know, robots in the home all of a sudden doesn't seem that wild.
Yeah, so. Totally.
So when he took it apart, did it seem like it felt sad or happy?
I thought I heard just like a little bit of whimpering, but
you heard a faint scream.
Very small. Despair in the air. Yeah.
All right, well, our second robot story is about a company in Japan about to open a robot farm. Don't worry, not a farm that makes robots to take over the world, although I'm not saying that's not happening. This is a farm. It is almost entirely run by robots. This week, The Guardian reported that a company called Spread is a new automated indoor lettuce farm that's on track to deliver 11 million heads of lettuce a year. That's within the next 5 years. They're calling it a vegetable factory, which does not sound as good as a farm that just happens to be run by robots. I mean, at first I was like, well, is that a lot, 11 million heads of lettuce? And it is, once you really think about it. And it just showed how little I really think about where my food comes from.
How much you think about lettuce. I don't really think about lettuce a whole lot. So, yeah, I don't know if that number's
big. I feel like you're not supposed to, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I was thinking, this is sort of a stray thought, but I was, you know, I was wondering, like, could you put something like a vegetable factory in, like, an urban food desert and have that do some good, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's always so much talk about, you know, everyone's scared of you know, losing jobs to automation and kind of how that's going to work with sort of, you know, not even just the lower section of the skills economy, but even kind of the lower part of the middle class section, like, you know, skilled work and everything. But I'm always kind of curious, yeah, like where there's an angle for this to kind of go in a positive
right.
direction.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's not all doom and gloom here. Like, humans are still required to plant the mm-hmm. seeds. So they can hire, I don't know, how many humans does it take to plant a lettuce seed? I'm not sure. So they're not totally out of work.
Well, okay. But. So Japan is interesting, right? Like, Japanese culture is much more comfortable with robots. And I have just finished reading Machines of Loving Grace by John Markoff in the New York Times. Great book. And what he says is that's part of the population in Japan. It's aging. And right. there's a lot of worry about, like, who's going to take care of us? Well, the robots will take care of us. That's, you know, that's sort of why. And, you know, there's other cultural reasons why robots are more popular in Japan, but that's one of them. And so this is also what this farm is trying to do. There's, you know, even in the United States, fewer people want to be farmers. Young people don't really want to be farmers as much. And that's part of the problem too, and they are too. So what they're saying is they're trying to, with the robots and the technology, get more younger people interested in farming so that they will still want to plant the seed. So yeah, it's.
So maybe instead of becoming a farmer, you become a farm robot engineer.
Something right. like that. Yeah. Yes.
Well, that, I mean, that is like one of the arguments that certain, you know, economists and analysts and folks make, is that, you know, that there will be job loss in general with automation, but you will also see like job transition. And of course, at this point, it's really hard to tell. And a lot of this stuff is purely theoretical. But mm-hmm. that is one of the kind of, main thoughts.
Right. Yeah. It's not a one-to-one jobless. I mean, we've had ATMs forever and we still have bank tellers for
exactly.
now. But yeah, that's so the factory is really interesting. The lettuce will be grown in Florida ceiling shelves and it's going to be pesticide free. And so that'll have more beta carotene in it. So it'll be better for you. But, you know, there's always the idea of like robot grown lettuce is scary to people. We want our food from the earth. But that's not necessarily better.
So, Anthony, I just put in a link from Bleak in the chat room. He, and here it's on cell 35, he attached a link to something called Growtainers, which I think is kind of what you're talking about, Aaron. These are the portable farm of the future. These are containers that are basically computerized way of farming, you know, wherever you happen to be, anywhere on Earth, as they say. But yeah, it almost looks like a server room. You know what I mean? But
of course it does.
instead of that, it's an actual farm facility. You know, automated farming. So.
And Creamy Corn Cob in the chat room also said someone just posted a lettuce recall here in the chat room. So maybe they didn't want to stop. They want us to stop talking about lettuce.
Oh, I see. We've talked too much about lettuce.
Enough lettuce, more technology.
Fine. What if I told you that we are all taking part in building the world's biggest robot ever? You, me, all of us. Ready to have your mind blown? Bruce Schneier posits that we're all building the world-sized web. That's right. World-sized web is a robot where three things combine. Those three things, if I can find them in my list, are the sensors. The sensors, a.k.a. the eyes, right? These are all kind of parts of a human or a robot. This would be things like the smartphones that track our movement, our thermostats, our light bulbs, all that kind of stuff. The smarts, our brains, things like the internet's ability to interpret the data that it gets from the Internet of Things and all that and determine what to do. And then there's the actuators, the doers, which are kind of like our hands and our feet. These set the temperature for us. They automatically route our autonomous vehicles in different directions based on, you know, congestion and all that kind of stuff. It's persistent thanks to the cloud. It's all up in the cloud, so it never shuts down. We are part of the biggest robot ever. We're building it with the Internet of Things. Is this something we should be afraid of, or should we embrace it?
Both.
Oh, okay. Great. I have no idea what to do with that.
This is like dangerously close to like a Doctor Who episode. But, you know, I think that's sort of the thing with data in general is that there's so much of it out there, but it's only the intersections that are useful or actionable. Mm-hmm. And that's where the potential is, right? So sure. It's those intersections where this could either go well or very badly.
Yes. Bruce actually advises that we create an agency, some sort of an agency to kind of deal, like focus on the complexities of, you know, the long-term ramifications of what is being built right now and kind of the potential of them. So we aren't surprised by the kind of the influence of power that one single entity can have over this machine that we're building.
Well, that's sort of what Elon Musk did, right? Like, or is that something different? Like he has his whole like AI organization that he has to make sure that everyone's paying attention to what's happening before the robots take over. So I totally agree. Like, I think we should embrace it. I love technology, but I also think we should be paying attention.
Sure. Like, we might not realize kind of the long-term ramification of the things we're building now, mm-hmm. but that's always the way it is with technology, and it's easy to fear technology, and we always have, so there you go. We haven't learned anything.
Comforting.
Yeah, this message brought to you by Tech News.
Well, last week we talked to Ian Thompson from The Register about the sickening state of IT security practices in hospitals and doctors' offices. And David from Connecticut, who is a medical doctor himself, wrote in to say in the U.S., HIPAA and the HITECH Act levy significant fines against hospitals and practices for failing to properly secure patient information. So things are getting better. Thank you, David. This was an interesting conversation that we had just about how our medical information is really not being protected. Doctors are leaving, you know, laptops open. It's someone's job to go and log in to make sure they're always logged in. So it's scary, but I guess things are getting better.
They've started somewhere, and I don't know. It's just it seems like the problem is so wide and spread out amongst so many different elements that can be left insecure, you know what I mean? That it seems like it's a lot harder to kind of crack down on. But yeah,
thanks for David from Connecticut for writing in. And if you would like to write in, you can send email to tnt@twit.tv. You can also catch us on Twitter at Tech News Today TV or find us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/TechNewsToday TV. And I really appreciate David being a doctor writing in because, you know, we try to do all the research, but if you're actually in the field that we're talking about, it's great to hear from you and say, you know, to let us know, hey, you know, this is the way it really is.
Completely agree. Remember when we told you about the couple who had pretty much gotten used to random people showing up at their doorstep demanding their lost smartphones? No one seemed to know exactly what was happening to bring people to their doorstep. They knew it was something weird with GPS, all that kind of stuff, or potentially GPS. The truth is out there, and we have an update. But first, let's take a minute to thank NatureBox. NatureBox is the AAA of snacks. That's right. All the snacks you need in one box shipped to your doorstep. When hunger strikes, don't reach for that half-eaten bag of chips. Be prepared with smart, delicious snacks from NatureBox, like dark cocoa nom noms. The names are almost as delicious as the food itself. Apple pie oat clusters. Mm-hmm. Yes, you know you want it. Mini Belgian waffles. My favorite. This bag is dwindling, by the way. It used to be a lot more fuller than it actually is. Dark chocolate berry trail mix. You're salivating. I saw it. I saw you salivate.
Dark chocolate. Very good for you.
All of NatureBox's snacks are made with high quality ingredients that you can trust. Trying to eat healthier doesn't mean giving up flavor. They have vegan, no sugar added, non-GMO options. You can choose savory, sweet, salty, tart, whatever your fancy. Choose from over 100 unique, tasty options. Here's a few more. Golden apple tea biscuits, sriracha roasted cashews. Those are some of your favorites, right?
Yeah, they are.
Plus, you can fill out your own snack profile and get personalized recommendations based on your preferences. And the best part, NatureBox delivers right to your door. So you don't even have to get all you have to do is go to the door. You don't have to, go in the car and go to the store to get your snack. Just walk to the door, pick up the box, and eat. Fuel your game engine with healthy snacks. Visit naturebox.com/twit to get 50% off your first box now. That's naturebox.com/twit. Go there, get 50% off of your first box of delicious personalized snacks sent directly to you sitting on your doorstep. It's waiting there. It's waiting for you to open the box. Just open it and enjoy. You're thinking about it, aren't you?
I am. Mm-hmm.
That was rough.
Sorry. I'm sorry to do that to you, Aaron, but sometimes we got to do it. It's just part of what we do. TNT's fan of the day is Casey Will Winemaker on Twitter, who says, got up to get a cup of coffee and found someone stole my spot.
Oh, I don't know if you can see, but it looks like a boxer.
Yeah. Oh, adorable. Love
boxers.
Looks
like a little boxer face and laying on the keyboard there.
We can't help if our content is dog friendly, too. We cater to all walks of life, so dogs are invited.
Dogs deserve to know about the potential robot apocalypse.
I think dogs can understand everything that we talk about and all of the robots that are impending on their reality. Mm-hmm. They just can't communicate very well with us other than barks.
But that's a good example of what you were talking about, Aaron, before. It's not a one. I mean, Ibo was, a decade ago, and we still have real dogs, so.
Yeah, exactly.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your dog and post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat. I don't know if we'll see it at Snapchat, but I just installed it, by the way. I did. And use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we're going to find it.
All right. Well, a few weeks ago, we told you the story about a house in Atlanta where people kept showing up because their Find My Phone apps had told them that their phones were in this house, but the phones were not in this house. It was a mystery that no one could solve, not even the tenacious Kashmir Hill, a frequent yet elusive guest on this show. It turns out that Kashmir has been working with the folks at the podcast Reply All to solve this mystery, and they did. The culprit.
What did they find out?
The culprit is old people.
Oh, I don't think we pose that as a potential problem.
So the young couple, they live in a neighborhood that's mostly older, retired couples. Some people don't even live in the houses that are in the neighborhood. It turns out that this couple was one of the only couples that had a router on the block. And so security researcher Dave Maynor says that because their area had fewer Wi-Fi networks than most places in big cities, they're in Atlanta, the Find My Phone apps leading to the house might not have had enough GPS and cell towers triangulation power, and they might be relying on the IP address to figure out where they were. I think I got most of that right. Now, if you want a more complete explanation, definitely read Kashmir's article in Fusion or listen to the Reply All podcast. It's episode 53 called In the Desert. This was really fascinating. Had you heard anything about this, Aaron?
I hadn't actually until today, but it's one of those things where you almost read it and you're like, of course, there's something like that. Yeah.
Right, now that we've solved the mystery.
I know, right? Yeah, oh, yeah, no-brainer.
It was definitely going to be like a couple of old people and a half.
That was the obvious solution. I think what I'm happiest about out of this is that I now know that wiggle.net exists. Wiggle.net, which is kind of a place that you can go to kind of map Wi-Fi access points. Of course, I went on there and found my house and was like, is it mapped? And it's not. So I don't know. I don't know whether I'm doing something right or something wrong, but it's not there. And I think I'm okay with that. But it's just kind of an interesting visualization, a layer over Google Maps to kind of, you know, find Wi-Fi access points all over the place. If you zoom in on where Twit is, you can see some of our access points there and everything. But
yeah, it's wiggle.net.
Yes. So nobody in their neighborhood really had a router other than them.
Right.
And because the neighborhood was so light on routers and theirs was the only one there.
Well, it wasn't just that. Yeah. I guess the IP and Wi-Fi mapping databases, they rely on phones too. You know, they're constantly collecting our information, you know, anonymized probably, but inside our phones are all of this technology to create the maps that we depend on. And so the idea was that there weren't that many cell phones in this neighborhood either compared to other places in big cities. So it just didn't. So it was finding it within a certain area, and it all pointed to this one house.
I doubt that's solved. All right. I don't know where to go with that other than it's probably going to happen again to somebody else. And I'm sorry if it
right.
is.
And I just want to, I like old people, and I'm sure lots of old people have routers.
I know some old people.
I know. Some of my best friends are old people. I thought this was fascinating. And I'm also a big fan of Cashmere's and Reply All, which is a great podcast if you haven't listened to it. Do. And Aaron, thank you so much for joining us and just rolling with all the crazy dog robot things I threw at you.
Really. Yeah, thanks so much for having me. And you know, it's no fun if you don't talk about dog robots. So.
True. Yeah.
It always seems to come around to dog robots.
Doesn't
every
it?
Single day.
So tell us a little bit more about what you are, what's up on Tech Republic that you've been working on lately.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that I've, you know, kind of planning for Mondays, if you, you know, stop by the site, then I'm working on a check-in on Google Cardboard. You know, they released some stats last week that sounded really great about how there's, you know, 5 million units of Cardboard kind of out in the wild. And I think 25 million downloads of, you know, Cardboard and whatnot. And so I'm taking a little bit of a more in-depth look. Okay, context. What exactly does that mean? Because it really still is early days for VR. So, that's kind of the main thing I've got on my plate right now.
How do you feel as far as like the impact of Cardboard just on VR acceptance in general? Do you think it's one of the bigger drivers right now just because it's so accessible?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's one of those, it's fascinating because perceptions have completely, well, to a good degree, shifted. I think it was at one point seen as something dinky, and then maybe we did not want this as the way that we were going to like introduce people to VR. Because it's really 360 video and not, you know, in a totally immersive, not totally interactive. But at this point, it's such an easy access point and the buzz seems to be positive in a way far more positive than, for example, Google Glass way back when. So I think that people are, definitely starting to pay more attention to it and figure out how they can use it either in their personal lives or for business, you know, product demos, marketing, that sort of thing, kind of attach themselves to something that for the most part right now has pretty decent reputation. So sure. I think that its significance was underestimated.
Well, I know that for a fact. I was in the IO audience when they gave out the Cardboard initially and everybody walking out of there was like, oh, thank you.
What is this?
Okay, we got this Cardboard thing, and it turned out to be one of the coolest things we got at the event.
Yeah.
So you're at Aaron. You're at TechRepublic.com, at Aaron Carson on Twitter, and then if people want to follow your Tech Republic Snapchat stories, how do they do that?
Sure. So our Tech Republic handle is just Tech Republic Snapchat.
That was a good choice.
Make it easy.
Yeah. Excellent. Now I just have to figure out how Snapchat works in order to do that.
I've installed it, so I'm going to figure it out. Dang it. I'll let you know what I find out.
That's half the battle.
Yeah, right. I know, right?
Yeah. Speaking of old people, right, click this one. Thank you so much, Aaron. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you, Aaron. All right, tomorrow's guest will be Jeff John Roberts from Fortune. Looking forward to having him on the show tomorrow. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a voicemail. That's 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We are at TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you want to know about our upcoming guests or guests on other Twit shows, you can subscribe to our newsletter. We're not going to spam your inbox or sell your details to anyone. Sign up at twit.tv/newsletter. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and tell your friends to subscribe to the show and tell them to tell their friends to subscribe to the show and so on.
It's working.
All the ways to subscribe are right there on our show page at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to get in touch with me, I am on Twitter at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. My voice is going away. Thanks to our live producer, Anthony Nielsen, and all the folks who help us produce this show every day. Really appreciate it. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We're going to see you tomorrow, aren't we? Yeah, we are.
My hope.